in the saddle again. Out where a friend is a friend, where the longhorn cattle feed on the lowly Jimson weed, I'm back in the saddle again. Riding the range once more, toting my old 44, where you sleep out every night and the only law is right. Back in the saddle.
Okay, so we're back in the saddle again, and a little bit of fair use there. That was Gene Autry, song that neither Jay or I are old enough to actually remember. But still,
totally fair still.
I think it's fair because here we are, doing a rebooting the news at NYU. And
as the new school year opens,
they're back. Everywhere you look,
the students are back.
Oh, God.
And Dave and I are back in the studio. And
oh, no, we're back in the saddle.
We're back in the saddle.
Mm-hmm.
And we're ready for another year of rebooting the news.
Happy to be here, too.
Our elemental podcast and plenty of things to talk about.
Mm-hmm.
One of them, right off the bat, is that Dave has been reappointed a visiting scholar at NYU for another year. Congratulations.
Yeah. Thanks. It's great to be here.
Uh-huh.
I'm having a blast.
Your move to New York is proving to be prescient and, I think, successful so far.
How's that? Why is it prescient?
Because there's something happening here, as I said.
Mm-hmm.
And
when is there not something happening in
New York? There's always something happening in New York, but the media world that is headquartered in New York was a very stable world for a very long period of time. And now it is not stable. It is shifting. And that's what I meant by prescient.
Mm-hmm. Or rebooting.
Rebooting.
Right. Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. And I think a lot of people sense that in different ways.
Mm-hmm.
So, and things like the sale of Newsweek and the collapse of magazine empires and the uncertainty that is coursing through the broadcast world are all part of that.
Mm-hmm.
And we have a new crop of Studio 20 students arriving, who I will meet for the first time next week. Larger than the first class, more diverse.
So this is the second time that
this
Studio 20
is the second group of Studio 20 students, yep.
Mm-hmm. And they're here for three semesters, is that
three
right?
Three semesters.
Right. And so they're still, the first crop is still here, then.
Correct. There's an overlap during the fall semester.
Right.
And those students are all transitioning towards doing their own projects, each with media partners, as they seek to make a name for themselves as rebooters of the news.
What about the East Village Local? How's that going?
And the local East Village, or LEV.
Oh, did I get that wrong?
As we call it, the local East Village is the official title, will launch September 13th.
My God, that's like next week.
Uh-huh. And there will be some growing pains. I'm sure it won't be, you know, spectacular right out of the box. But one thing that I think it will launch with, and I'm very, of course, excited about this, is the Open Assignment Desk, which is actually the first product of Studio 20 that is not a person or an idea.
I see.
It's a piece of software that is actually a WordPress plugin, and it will, I hope, be operating when the LEV launches.
Mm-hmm.
So what that means is that would-be contributors to the local East Village will be able to go to a URL, and if they are registered users of the nytimes.com, be able to see a list of assignments that we need people for and nominate themselves for those. They will also be able to pitch ideas for what we should cover, write about, videotape, which will then go to an editor for approval and revision, and if approved, will go up on the list of possible assignments.
Mm-hmm.
So it's attempting to both become an editorial workflow system, but open that workflow at two critical points, where people get assignments and where people suggest ideas. And it integrates into blogging software, essentially.
Well, that's unusual, actually, for people. So if I wanted to write for this publication, I had no affiliation with either NYU or the New York Times, I could actually...
Yeah.
Who decides?
Well, the same person who decides everything, the editor.
The editor.
There's single point for all ideas. And
he, the editor is...
Rich Jones.
Rich, and Rich works for...
Rich works for NYU. He is actually a clinical faculty member here.
But he's an ex-New York Times
guy.
That's why he was sort of an interesting choice there, or why the Times might have been willing to go.
Yes.
I mean, the Times basically has allowed their brand to be used with a certain amount of independence from their editorial organization, right?
Well, it is a content partnership.
So do they have a veto? Or
they, yes.
If
in
it's
theory,
not all
they
the
do.
News that's worth to blog, then they can say no. This
yeah,
really
they could.
Doesn't get our branding, our authority.
But what they've done is delegate the editorial authority to Richard Jones, who is a former New York Times person.
And so they feel that he embodies their principles enough so that they are comfortable with letting that.
Yes, and... From the beginning of my discussions with them, which go back over a year and a half, the idea of it, there's a single set of standards that actually unites NYU Journalism and New York Times, and Jones, as the editor, is sort of putting that into practice.
So, Jay, what's your role in LEV?
I don't have any editorial role. I am one of the faculty advisors to the project.
Mm-hmm.
I had a large role in getting it started.
Certainly one of the founders of it, right?
Yeah.
Right?
Mm-hmm. One
I mean,
of the founders.
If this were a technology venture, if it were a business, you certainly would be a founder, right? I
mean, and as we go forward, the role that I want to have is, first of all, explaining what we're doing with the Lev and interesting audiences both in New York and outside in the larger journalism world in our experiment. And the thing that I'm really excited about is that for Studio 20 students who are here studying innovation, they have a working laboratory that is set completely within the real-world publishing environment.
Mm-hmm.
And so things that they want to try and ideas they want to test can be tested in this world, this site. I'm hoping that Studio 20 will be sort of the innovation wing of the local East Village. And the assignment desk software is an example of that. So my role will be those things, is explaining it and pushing innovative ways of doing community journalism, but we have a huge challenge in front of us, which is simply to put out a site that's New York Times quality and gets used and makes sense to the people of the East Village.
Right. It has to embody the East Village, too.
Yeah.
It has to be more than making sense to the East Village.
It has to reflect the East Village.
It has to, in some sense, be the East Village,
exactly.
Right? I mean, it's not just... I mean, you know, these days a news product is accessible not just to the people within the community that it's about, but also to the rest of the world.
Right.
So if you were sort of wondering what's going on in the East Village tonight, well, there would be your place.
Exactly.
Certainly you'd hope it would be one of the places that people actually end up at, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
And so it's going to be a long climb.
Well, after watching a lot of planning, for me, there's been, I mean, no secret that I find so much planning quite frustrating. You know,
yeah.
I'm one of these guys that likes to get in there, start making mistakes, and learn from them immediately, and then make your course corrections, and, you know, and that the process that, and I understand that, you know, to different extents that, you know, a major university and a major news organization, they don't share that. I mean, you have to be a different kind of person to be in a position of responsibility at those places.
It's harder when you're dealing with institutions.
So right. So what I decided to do was take a few steps back and wait and see, you know, till something is actually out there. And so now I'd like to, well, we'll see what happens. 13th is, what is today? Today's the 7th?
Yes.
So the 13th is 8 days from now, right? Did I get that right? No.
It's Monday.
I was a math major, by the way. Everybody loves that.
Yeah.
So it's next Monday.
Yeah.
My God.
Right.
Wow. So were you going to be burning the midnight oil on Sunday, do you think? You're going to be
I don't have direct editorial.
No, moment. I understand that. When I say you, I mean we.
I'm sure there'll be the normal
you think
crashing.
A lot of sort of panic and, you know. It's good because that's, you know, you have that moment when, you know, sort of shit hits the fan. And, you know, so now it's, you can't plan anymore. Now
yes.
It's like, this is it. You have
exactly.
to actually do.
Yeah.
And, you know, my prediction was that it'll look immediately different the moment that happens. Once you flip the switch and get on the other side of it, it'll take on a completely different dimension. And so.
Completely.
Yeah.
So all right, let's move on. That's
good.
Happening.
I'm glad we got to talk about that. All that stuff. You know, it's like you don't want to make these transitions without, you know, putting some kind of a stake in the ground so that you can look back and see how foolish your stakes
were. Yes, and our next show will be right in the midst of the launch, so we'll be able to.
Do you think there'll be like major? Well, hopefully, it'll be quiet enough so we can actually get some work done here.
Yeah. Adrian, we're getting sound from the classroom piped in. I'm hearing.
Are we?
Sound from the classroom.
Well, maybe it's not bad.
All right.
You know, we're in the university.
Sort of an ambient
atmosphere. Yeah. If people don't like it, they can leave us comments. Because as we know, blogs are not conversations. maybe we don't want to go there next. Let's talk about Ping. How about that?
Okay.
You know, so switch gears.
Okay.
To somebody else's. I mean, this is a perfect example, I think, of why it pays to actually do some planning before you release a product. Because it's becoming increasingly clear that Apple is not prepared for a world where Apple is a leading company as opposed to a band of pirates, you know, renegades hoisting the Jolly Roger and planning to take the world by storm, which is, I think, still to this day how Steve Jobs views himself and his company, which, if he does, is completely inaccurate. I mean, Apple is in many ways a dominant technology company and is expected when they get up on stage and say this is what he said was, and this also goes, we want to talk about positioning today too. He got up and announced a lot of products last week, and it was unusual, the announcement, because it was streamed in video over the internet. And so I haven't been to an Apple announcement in probably almost 10 years.
Uh-huh.
Maybe even more. And so I have sort of lost touch with what they're like. I know what they announce, but I don't know how they do it. You have to wonder why this one. I mean,
tell me what Ping is and what they announced.
Right. Well, okay. It's what they said it is versus what it actually is. Is a very interesting contrast.
Right.
What he said is it's a social network for music. That was iteration one on the explanation. Iteration two was it's like Facebook or Twitter for music.
Hmm.
Now, when you hear that description, you go, well, yes, that will work.
Mm.
Especially when you consider the fact that Apple has captured such a huge portion of that market of
right.
music. All the commercial commerce of music now flows through Apple, right?
Okay, so far so good.
Right. So in fact, my reaction during the announcement was this is an absolute winner. There's no chance this isn't a huge thing.
Mm-hmm.
I used some expletives to describe how incredible an accomplishment it was. Because no part of me ever guessed that it would be as lame as it actually is.
Uh-huh.
And it is
okay, so
unbelievable.
Why is it so lame?
It is not Facebook, okay? Although it looks like Facebook, when you see it, it presents like Facebook. However, and this is very germane to the rebooting the news topic, the functionality, the ability to do Facebook-like things is not there for the end user.
Mm-hmm.
It's there for the bands, It's there for the record labels,
uh-huh.
and it's there for Apple. Uh-huh. However, you and I, the only way we can participate as users of this service is to buy things.
Right.
Which, of course,
that kind of participation
you knew that was
like.
Going to happen, yeah. right? And so that's, by the way, how you post something, right, is by buying it. And all those functions that...
I'm rolling my eyes.
Yeah, well, I think you can probably even see that, you know. I mean, when you could see the collective eye roll, not one person. This is a case where, you know, Apple has these fanboys that go out on the internet and mm-hmm. attack anybody who dares question, you know, anything about Apple. They were completely silenced by this. They had absolutely nothing to say because it was a no low contendere thing because they absolutely put up absolutely nothing in the way of a product. And there were a lot of questions why they did this. I mean, why this way? And I gave it a few hours of thinking. I came in at the second round. I don't like to be in the first round of commentators on these things because that you know, I don't think you get the answer in the mm-hmm. first few hours. I think you have to sort of think it through and sort of, you know, give it a chance to sink in. What conclusion I came to was that Apple is green. That Apple really is they're ill prepared for this world that they're in. And my guess as to why they put all these controls on is they didn't want anybody using this network to say harsh things about Apple.
Hmm.
If they had allowed anybody to write whatever they wanted to on this thing, then that would have been, then the comments wouldn't have been so harsh, right? But they certainly are subject to criticism. They certainly do things that are, you know, harebrained and wrong. They don't want to hear about that. They don't want that to penetrate. And the whole, you know, flat-footedness of the AntennaGate response was another example of that. This is, you know, public relations 101. Any company can deal with a crisis like that. You have to be prepared to deal with that. It's simply going to happen.
Well, it's public relations 101, but it's also something a little bit more than that, Dave, because one of the things that these born-on-the-web companies have to deal with, like Dig, for example, and Facebook, is that people can use the system
right.
to criticize the company.
Well, that's what Apple was trying to avoid, and Dig has it in the worst way.
Yeah.
I mean, Dig is a pathological example of that, in that they absolutely have no ability to navigate that product. They cannot move it. The users completely control them. Yeah. They might as well shut it down. I mean, the users ought to take that into account, but they don't.
Uh-huh.
Right? I mean,
it's a major complication. You use Facebook to organize your resistance to Facebook.
Well, Facebook isn't as easy to do that with as Dig is. And because Facebook has that social graph thing that, like, I'll give you an example. I saw this wonderful video of a kid who was playing On the Road Again, the Willie Nelson song. And this kid was 5 years old. 5 years old, and he was playing the song with, like, just style and joy mm-hmm. and technically quite good, actually, you gotta mm-hmm. say. I mean, at 5 years old, the technically part can't be all that good, right? I mean,
right.
That's still the way to go.
Totally.
So, if this had been on YouTube, viral video, right?
Right.
It's on Facebook. No. I can't forward it to anybody. I can't send a pointer to that. You won't be able to see it. I couldn't see it because I didn't even follow this person. A friend showed it to me
uh-huh, right.
on her account,
yeah, I see what
on
you
her
mean.
Computer.
The
Facebook,
viral thing
Facebook
is necessarily
not, right,
limited.
It's
yeah.
not a publishing medium. This
yeah.
is sort of the, you know, this is something we need to understand in the new context is, you know, not everything is publishing, right?
Right.
That's why, you know, we'll talk a little bit about, you know, blogs or conversations as a concept. Maybe it's a good time to shift into that, actually.
Yeah.
You know, I said something that, you know, people say blogs are conversations, and in the context of trying to, you know, think through maybe there's some new ways of doing commenting systems, I said something I was trying to be controversial about. I said I don't think blogs are conversations. I think blogs are publications. That's not to say there isn't a role for conversations on the internet. There is on the web. But blogs aren't that. Blogs are different. Blogs are absolutely, if you can read something on the web, then I can read it on the web. There's no, then that's, to me, is what a publication is. Because the core word, what's the key word? The core of publication is public,
mm-hmm.
right?
I mean, yep.
Right?
Making it public.
Right. It's privacy and
accessible
public.
Accessible to all.
Correct. That, I think that fundamentally is. Mm-hmm. So, you know, in a way, if the Times does ever put up that firewall they keep talking about, maybe they're no longer a publication, right? Maybe they've certainly done something to limit it. You know, I mean, I think the assumption was in the print New York Times before the web that they were as public as you could possibly be.
The newspaper of record.
Right. And, you know, all right, so you had to pay a dollar or whatever it was before the web came along to buy a copy of the thing.
Public as you could possibly be.
In that
yes,
period.
In that period,
right.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, how
and
could
now,
you give
public
away
as you can possibly be means available on the web.
At $0 cost. Right,
yeah.
Because there's no cost to manufacturing.
Yeah.
The reason why it had to be a dollar is because everybody understands that there was manufacturing involved there,
yeah.
Right?
It's a big shift. And throughout press history, there have been these two different ways of gaining influence and power as a publisher. One is to go for the biggest possible public and the influence that comes with that. And the other is actually to confine yourself to an elite that's willing to pay a lot more. And
right.
The Times of London, Murdoch's Times, is going in that direction. By making everything a paywall and by requiring an annual subscription.
That's already happened a while ago, right? That was
yes,
a couple of months.
Yes, it started in June, yeah.
So how's it going? Do you have any
well,
information on that?
Well, if Murdoch and company had the courage of their convictions, we would know how it's going because the information would be public, but they don't have that much confidence in what they're doing, so we don't know for sure. But the early reports were 90% of the users fell away. But that's what
but
they expected.
Beyond that, we don't know.
Beyond that, we don't know. They have extended the free period where you have to sign up, but you don't get charged for a while. So we don't know.
Jay, they lost 90%
of the online users.
When it was free, but you had to sign up? In
no.
other words, there was no tariff and... Oh, no. Okay.
It used to be like any other site, and then they made it a pay site.
But didn't you just say that you don't actually have to pay?
You do, but they have some sort of introductory offer where you get like a little bit of time before the payment starts.
I see.
But I think you have to give your credit card or whatever.
Okay. So there, yeah.
So we don't know what's going to happen. But the other way is to go for the widest possible public, to lower the cost as much as feasible. And to profit off the huge reach of your work. And the Times of New York seems to be trying to sort of thread a middle course there, which we will see in January how exactly they propose to do that.
I think we sort of hit on one last episode talking about the Consumer Reports of localities, you know, that there are products and services. You know, when you're paying money for something, when the decision you're making, I mean, why is it that we both felt the Consumer Reports was a no-brainer?
Yeah.
Right? I mean, no, it is a no-brainer. If I'm going to spend, you know, $50,000 furnishing a house and buying, you know, over the life that I own the house, you know.
Because paying for something that saves you money makes total sense, just as paying for something that makes you money
correct.
Makes total sense.
Right,
yeah.
Exactly. So maybe it's even more than that. Maybe it's that if you're spending money on something, then spending a little bit more money...
To make a smart purchase.
Correct, is money well spent.
Yeah, right.
I mean, you know, there was already outflow, so... Direct a little bit of it to somebody who's going to advise you on that.
Right.
Not a hard thing to do, right? Especially if you can make it technically easy to do.
Mm-hmm.
So you might argue that that a New York Times minus the movie reviews, minus reviews of other things that they aren't now reviewing, you know, like they could review retail in New York City, you know,
mm-hmm.
So you would know which retailers are giving the best customer service. why are you laughing?
Well, because retail advertising has always been so huge, and this is where you get into what's different about Consumer Reports.
Right.
Because the reason you don't see consumer reviews
because
of
that
auto dealers
with the advertising.
Yeah, is obvious.
Well, now you don't have that problem. They're not advertising.
Well, yeah, if the advertisers aren't advertising, then it makes possible a new kind of consumer journalism.
Correct. I mean, the thing is that when your assumptions change, you need to now go back and revisit how structural those are built into the way you do business. There's your example, right? So, you know, you couldn't do reviews of auto dealers because your salespeople would get angry phone calls from them too often.
Pretty much,
and you just couldn't deal with it, right?
Yeah.
Now they're not advertising, so they're fair game. I mean, they should have always been fair game.
They should
right?
have always been
yeah,
fair game.
Yeah, I mean, it shouldn't have been, you know, according to what they tell us about their
but
process.
But the auto and real estate sections of the New York Times have always been the weakest sections of the New York Times for obvious reasons.
Interesting. What about the advertising? They have the advertising industry.
The advertising world?
Yeah.
Like Madison Avenue?
Well, it's headquartered in New York.
Yes.
So it would, and they cover it. In fact, I went to a conference at the Times a few months back where a big portion of it was about advertising, and I thought I would be bored by it. I thought I would, you know, but it turns out actually it was very interesting.
No, it's always interesting.
Well, I mean, when you get to advertising in the tech industry, it really truly is boring. I mean, you know, that they talk about the technology of advertising, and I really don't give a shit.
Well, today, advertising is being disrupted in a major way, and that is a very interesting subject to me.
They made it interesting.
Yeah.
Give them that. But what that focused my attention on was that there is an editorial product in the New York Times about the advertising industry.
Correct. Yes, it's one of the major industries they cover.
Do you think they do that well?
They do a pretty good job. I'll tell you, Advertising Age does a great job. It's definitely worth reading.
Do they actually take ads?
They do.
So therefore, then some organizations have been able to navigate through this. I mean, when I ran a software company, we had a big ad budget. You know, probably the biggest money we spent outflow of expense of running the company was advertising.
Uh-huh.
You know, the more we advertised, the more we would sell. It was a very strong correlation between the two things. So if you wanted to grow, you had to spend more on advertising. Well, we advertised in the publications that covered us.
Uh-huh.
Right? I mean,
those
are the only ones we advertised
right,
in fact.
The way it works, yeah.
Exactly. So, mm-hmm. I don't know. I mean, if I'm going to go buy something, I'd like to know. I think it would help improve the whole commerce of the New York metropolitan area if the New York Times did take an active role in helping us study that and understand it and come up with some criteria for deciding what makes a good retailer. And have that be a process that's interactive so that we all get to participate in deciding what we want from our retailers.
Participate, that's the key word.
That's our shared religion.
Every time people decide to participate, they are creating an opportunity for the journalist. Because if you can give people information that helps them participate wisely, shrewdly, you have a job to do. You have a market. You have a role.
You know, going back to my, you know, prototypical example, which is internet connectivity in New York, there are Fios trucks on my street right now.
Uh-huh.
Why isn't there a New York Times reporter there telling me what that means? I mean, I walked up to those guys and asked them what they're doing there.
Mm-hmm.
Why isn't that something that my community newspaper is taking an active role in? Because I think everybody living in that community, you know, okay, I don't know if everybody actually is interested in it, but I think they should be. And I think they would be if it had been defined.
I'm hoping we can do something about this with the local.
Really?
Yeah. I'm not sure exactly how we're going to tackle it yet.
Well, it's very simple, Jake. Walk around the neighborhood. They have these huge trucks. Verizon has these trucks.
Yeah.
They fly us on the side of them.
Yeah.
And it's not an absolute correlation. But it's not a bad one. If you see a Fios truck there with the cones out,
it probably means Fios is coming to that neighborhood.
Yeah,
I understand
it
what
might
you're saying.
Mean that. I mean, it's certainly
right,
worth asking the
it's
question.
It's not exactly simple. That does mean something.
What does?
But
oh,
the presence of the trucks.
But you can ask the driver, the people, the crew. They don't. They'll talk to you.
Well,
They will.
That's not as simple as you think.
Why?
Because, first of all, you have to identify yourself.
I didn't have to.
Well.
I'm just an interested citizen.
Yeah, but as reporters for the local, we would teach our students to identify themselves.
But Jay, didn't you say a while back in this very conversation that as a member of the East Village community, I would be allowed to write a piece for this publication.
Yes.
I'm not one of your students, you know.
Right.
just want to clear that up. Be sure we're on the same page with that.
Yes.
So what's wrong with one of the good citizens of the East Village of walking up to the Verizon Tribune?
In theory, nothing. But you don't
right.
know.
Once you identify yourself as a reporter to the Verizon truck guy, he's going to say, look, this is bullshit.
This is not my job.
I'm not talking to
you. Yeah,
right?
Exactly. Right.
I'm going to get fired if I talk to you.
Right.
But he would talk to me as a person.
All right.
He did. I proved
okay.
it. Proven.
Right. But then then the problem is we need to check that information. We need to make sure it's accurate. We need to
Jay. I saw an article in the New York Times this weekend where the headline said, I'm not exactly quoting it, some people say Craigslist is acting out of fear. Now, how much fact-checking do you think went into that?
People say.
I mean, it's easy. So now all you have to do, how much fact-checking do you have to do? It's
like, right.
I can have heard that they're coming. I mean, you know, I can make an accurate statement about this without having to check with the...
I want to figure out a somewhat more systematic way of going about this question of... services available in the East Village and where they are available, and it's something we should continue to talk about on air because I think it's a really great reporting challenge.
You know, the role of the press doesn't have to be arm's length in these things. You know, and when the press really is doing a great job, it isn't arm's length. The press can decide that this community desperately needs this. And then make it happen.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not outside of their bailiwick to do that. It's not inappropriate for them to do that. As long as they're acting seriously in the best interest of their community, right? You know, to decide that we need better internet connectivity in New York, you know, this is the way I put it, is like, you don't have a conflict of interest if you work for the San Jose Mercury News, if you think San Jose is a great place. And, you know, and you say so, and you act on that belief. Because
I wrote
a
whole book about this.
Did you? Okay, so you have an inherent conflict of interest that's perfectly appropriate, right? So for the local newspaper, so we're in agreement on this. Are we?
Yeah, I think there's...
What was the name of the book?
What Are Journalists For?
And What Are Journalists For? I just thought I would ask. Since you, when you write a book that has a question as
I'll
the title,
you
invite that question to be
you
asked.
Sure do, right? And I've been asked it many times. They should describe the world in a way that helps us participate in it.
I see. So, so internet connectivity seems so central to what a journalist is today.
Yes.
And participation, I totally believe
it's
in that.
It's also central to what an informed citizen is today.
Right.
Yes.
It's the whole nine yards in terms of what it means to be part of the community.
Yep.
It's our water system. It's not our water system. But certainly the telephones, certainly all forms of information flow there.
This gets to the topic of my lecture in Paris.
Tell us about your lecture in Paris, please.
Well, I was in Paris last week, and on Wednesday... I gave the inaugural lecture at Sciences Po, which is one of the leading journalism schools in France, to an entering class of about 40 graduate students. So this is the next generation of French journalists. And it was the first day of school. And my original title was the people formerly known as the audience and the audience properly known as the public. But it became a problem because the word for audience and the word for public in French is the same word.
Whoa. Wait a minute. What is that word?
Public, or le public.
Le public and
yeah,
the audience?
So it means audience and it means public.
Is that a good thing or a bad thing?
For me, it was a bad thing. It defeated what I was trying to do.
Interesting.
So what it turned into as I thought about it, rewrote it again on the plane.
At what point did you learn that the words were the same?
I actually knew that beforehand, and I had asked people over Twitter to give me, like, solutions to this problem. And I did come up with one that allowed me to translate the title roughly as the people formerly known as the readers and the readers properly known as the citizens, which was okay. But as I began to work on it and refine it and prepare it for actual delivery, what I realized that I was really writing about and what I wanted to get across to these students was a slightly different notion. And so what I've called the post that I just posted today, that is my rewritten version of this lecture, is the journalists formerly known as the media. And the argument of this piece is that because there's been this shift in power to the users, because seeing people as an audience or a mass audience that you can simply speak to is now breaking up and disintegrating, there's an opportunity for a new generation of journalists to define a new way of seeing the people out there on the receiving end of their work. And seeing people as a public, as an active public, using your work to participate is in fact what this new generation of journalists has the opportunity to define for us. Because, I say in this piece, the whole era of addressing people as an audience, which lasted about 115 years, is coming to a close, and yet the profession of journalism has lived its entire life under that regime. And so I said to these young journalists, you have an opportunity to break out of that regime and begin seeing people as a public, which is something that we've been struggling with and struggling toward for 250 years, because the public, the idea of the public, of people who know what's going on, who inform themselves, who argue about their problems and participate in solutions, is a very demanding and difficult ideal that is never completely realized, and we have to keep sort of striving to get to something like that, because the world of media and communication is a complicated and conflicted one, and we now have an opportunity to get closer to that ideal, even though it's not a description of the world that we actually have right now. And so that was the substance of my remark, is that because the people formerly known as the audience are actually here, the journalists formerly known as the media can emerge from the era of audience making and define a new way of seeing the people out there. That's what I told them. And it has a lot to do with how the internal image of the people that you're addressing within the mind of the journalist as they go about their work. And what I was trying to do was to activate a new image of the people out there in the minds of these young journalists, so that they don't operate with the same assumptions as the baby boom generation and generations before that.
Are they changing in France? Is journalism changing?
Oh, yeah, sure. Absolutely.
Aren't they subsidized by the government?
There are several important differences between the French system and the U.S. system. One of them is there is some subsidy of the old press by the government.
Mm-hmm.
There's much more involvement in how media organizations work. For example, there's a percentage of the budget required to be spent on training by law, which is something that would never happen in the United States. And there's a bigger role for unions. There's just much more state involvement in the media sphere in France than there is in the United States.
So but that means they don't have to change as quickly. Right
it
now?
Does in a way. It protects somewhat the
old system.
At least
this is what I've heard.
Yeah. But in fact, the disruption and the reboot of the news system is so much deeper than that, that it's happening anyway, even though there is this sort of state cushion in France. However, a lot of the students, apparently, according to their teachers, enter with the idea of, you know, I want to be a foreign correspondent in Buenos Aires for Le Monde, without quite realizing that the economic basis for that whole system is, you know, is disintegrating.
That happens here, too. The students often are the last ones to know.
Sometimes,
yeah. They're anyway, also more conservative than you think they should be.
That regularly happens, yes. But I understand it in a way because the attraction of journalism as a profession is bound up with the romance of the correspondent. And that is not a trivial thing. That's a real thing. And so I understand how that motivates people to go into it. Anyway, it was very interesting, very fun thing to do. And I was really honored to do it because, you know, to be able at the very beginning to try and persuade these students that the world is changing and they have this opportunity to, in a sense, define a new kind of journalism. That's for a professor, that's like the most fun you can have.
Cool.
Now, part of what I was trying to say there is that, and this gets to our theme of positioning, which we wanted to say a few words about.
We're running out of time rapidly, but let's use what time we have to do that, and we'll put it on the table for
all
next
all right, well, positioning, the way I meant it in the speech was, the way you address people positions them in a certain way. You can position people as spectators. You can position them as actors. You can position them as mute or as vocal or as participants. And learning the art of positioning as a journalist means addressing people in a particular way so that you call them forward to a particular kind of activity. And that's the essence of what I was trying to get across to those students.
That's not what I mean by positioning.
I know.
Yeah. It's a whole other thing. The art or science or whatever it is of positioning has to do with what's going on in the mind of the prospect. So there's whenever you're trying to communicate an idea or sell something, I mean, it's really about selling, or creating products, which is the same thing, or, you know, bringing about a change. You know, if you want people to do something, they have to understand how that relates to the things that they already do. We're thinking about what would be some good examples. I mean, at the time Google entered the internet, there was all the search engines. There had actually been some search engines that had come along, had sort of turned themselves into mashes of unidentifiable functionality, which created this perfect opportunity for somebody to come in and with a really sharp position and say, no, we're just the search engine. That's all we do. And and what happens is that people have this belief first of all, it has to be something that they want to do. Mm-hmm. There was this argument that do people actually want to search for stuff? And, we know the answer now, but at the time the belief was maybe they don't. And Google said very emphatically they do, and so we're going to do that really well.
Right.
And they the reason it worked is not because of what they did, but although it was necessary that they do what they do, It's because there was a place in the prospect's mind.
An open position.
Right.
Yes.
And filling that position was, had, there was value in that.
Right.
And it's so, it's the map of positioning more would be the other way. Would be, how does the press want to explain itself in such a way that the people say, oh, well, not only is that something that I believe exists, but, and there's their challenge, this is something that we would be willing to pay money for.
All right.
That's, now we got to go. We're out of time.
See you next week.
That's a good place to end.